Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, as always, joined by Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick on today's show. Today, got a lot to discuss. Earnings, obviously, Western Digital, Intel, Starbucks, to name a few. We're going to talk, of course, about PCG and their move yesterday and what it means going forward. And we're going to give ourselves a little pat on the back for that, or at least Dennis will, for having a call on that last week. We have the pod stocks ripping, as always. So we'll talk about that as well. We'll take your questions from our chat, and we have two guests for today. First up, 8:35, Fari Hamzy will join the show. He is the founder of Hamzy Analytics. And then at 8:50, we'll be joined by Jeremy Newsom, the CEO of Real Life Trading. Joel, what is the good word here in the overnight session?
Oh, we caught a nice pop in the S&Ps, trading up 19 handles at 26.53. We're right at Wednesday's high right now. That was 53.75. The big target on the upside, can we get to the four-day high at 26.77.75? Don't have anything in the book besides that. We have crude in the green here by 21 cents at 53.33. Just kind of a quiet consolidation here in the crude market. Gold up 360 at 1283.30. You had silver in the green by 7.5 cents at 15.375. Let's bring in Triple D. Triple D, I am really fired up today, and it's going to be No Mistake Friday.
Nice. We like No Mistake Friday.
I'm not touching that mute button. And I want to tell you, yesterday when I came on and you guys knew I was muted, I knew I was muted, and I was scrambling. I couldn't find it. But today, I wasn't on mute. All right. We got a ton of stocks to cover here today. Alan Blake, new to the show. He says, good morning, guys. He loves the show. Man, okay. Where do you want to start here, Dennis? I'm very fired up.
Lots of stocks. Let's start with the big gun from last night. It moved the entire market last night to the downside, and it is Intel. I know the market, and we're going to talk about the resilience here and some of the chip names and the bounce back in the market. But on the initial Intel headlines, the Qs got rocked, the SPY got rocked, and Intel got rocked. Give us the numbers. Intel has not recovered, but the market has.
So yeah, so this one's interesting here. So Intel Q4 adjusted EPS $1.28 actually beat the estimate, which is $1.22. And their net sales for the quarter, $18.6 billion, was a slight miss of the $19 billion estimate. They also are raising their quarterly dividend by 5%. But the guidance they gave was left a little bit to be desired. Their sales guidance, $71 billion versus a $73 billion estimate.
Stock down significantly last night. And on those initial numbers, the Qs got just rocked down a dollar. So the Qs fell a dollar. All tech just got smashed. You saw all the chip names getting hit. AMD was trading down in the 2030s. NVIDIA was trading down 4 points last night. You saw then Western Digital's numbers came out, and it got hit too on its initial numbers. It was trading down, I believe, another 37 handle. Applied Materials down, Lam Research down after having a great day, Xilinx down after having a great day. Everything was rocked just after the Intel numbers. And then some life. They started to actually drift up and started to bounce back. Not Intel, but some of the other chips. And the Qs were bouncing back, and the SPY was bouncing back. And you could see, I was like, I asked my buddy at Braid, I was like, are they going to shrug this Intel stuff off? Because it really looks like, and I'm like, this market looks like it wants to go back to green. So anyways, then the Western Digital guidance comes out. And the guidance wasn't good at all. So give us the Western Digital numbers, because it's all very interesting
stuff. Wow, you just covered like four stocks there.
Well, yeah, we're going through. I don't want to do technicals or anything yet. I want to do the big picture here. We're laying out a big picture here, because sometimes we get lost in the numbers on the show.
Yep.
And sometimes you got to take a look and sit back and take a look at the big picture here. So give me the Western Digital numbers here. As I said, I don't want to hear numbers. I want to hear the earnings numbers, though, for Western Digital. Give us that, Spencer. Give us the guidance. And then we're going to break this down for you.
Okay, a miss, a miss, and a miss. So Q2 EPS, $1.45, missed the $1.51 estimate. That was the Q2 EPS miss. Q2 sales miss as well, 4.23 versus $4.27 billion. So a slight miss there as far as guidance. I mentioned that is also a miss on the guidance call that gave their sales guidance for the Q3, $3.6 to $3.8 billion versus $3.9 billion estimate. And the EPS guidance they gave 40 to 60 cents for the Q2. So white Q2 sales guidance.
The stock was trading down already when they came out with that guidance. And when they came out with that guidance, they actually said something else. They said, I believe in the conference call, and I didn't listen to the conference call, so I'm getting this from other traders, but I believe they said, and if anybody did hear the call, maybe you can verify this for me, so the dividend's safe, that they see it going forward and they're going to keep the dividend. And they started ripping that stock. And what I mean by ripping is just started buying it. And it went through 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, $45 this thing printed over last night. Western Digital on a miss. They rallied this thing over 10% last night, and it's holding. We're up 9.59% here right now. So you analyze that, and you're like, how can that be? You know, how can, you know, a stock miss, you know, on the guidance and actually rally this much? It's telling you that the stock was just has been massively oversold. Sean Udall, let's give you some props here because he came on our show and said this thing's just dirt cheap. And I know you were buying in the $35 area. And I actually went, and when Sean Udall's that convicted on a pick, I sometimes go along with him. And I bought some too, just because Sean Udall, it's been a little bit of a rough ride here for the last, because he was on right at the end of the year. So it's been a little rough ride. We rode it up to 40, rode it back down to 35, back up to 40. Now it's looking like Sean's maybe going to end up being right here because, I mean, you rally that much on a miss. I mean, it can't go down on bad news. And not only that, it's rallying on bad news. It's telling me that the bottom's in. So maybe these things, and that's just not just for Western Digital. Maybe all of them are just so oversold now. You know, you look at Micron, you look at Applied Materials, you look at where they were, you look at, you know, some of the money that these things make, you know, even considering Western Digital, I mean, they make $1.40 in the quarter. So, I mean, you know, it is cyclical. We know these earnings are cyclical, but holy cow, some of these still make some pretty good money here. I think the market's telling you that it's in on all these things.
Yeah, in for the chips here. Western Digital, Dennis gave you that pre-market high, almost, did it get to $45? $45.18 print, $1.18 away. That could be a target on the upside. Coming back, as far as support goes, folks, it's kind of hard here. The lowest level you've been at since your decline is $42.50, so I'll keep an eye on that. Street leaning the wrong way in Intel, and I was looking at those things, and just before the close, I was like, man, maybe the puts are cheap on this, but I didn't get an execution in, and we did sell off. The initial low took you down all the way to 45.68. You have a daily low at that area, 45.54. So I think back and fill here, the buyer since 4 a.m. have been in here. I don't think you're going to see that pre-market low in order to fill the gap from yesterday. 48.60, that's a long ways away. So we'll probably just chop between like 46 and 48 today. That's what I'm looking at for Intel. And then the other one I just want to talk to a stock in this group. It's got my attention. I almost pulled the trigger yesterday. I didn't. Look at this $21 level here in AMD, Dennis. Does that look itchy or not?
Yeah, it does. This looks like it's ready to break out. And think about this. Intel trading down, and if you would tell me yesterday, you know, Intel's going to trade down 6%, the market's going to be really green and all the other chips are going to be up, I'd say you're nuts. That's what we're seeing here this morning. And AMD, props to Guy Adami, good call last night. He said this would be green here today. He actually said it was last pick on Fastmind when AMD was trading down 30-40 cents last night. He says it's going to be green. And you know what? I think he probably kickstarted that a little bit because as soon as he said that, they started buying the hell out of it. We know a lot of people watch Fast Money and they really move the stock. So he kickstarted it. But, I mean, they've bought them across the board. The only one that's not green really is NVIDIA, and it's come back a long way from its lows there too. But this looks ready to break out. I mean, you got Intel bad news, and people are going to say there's going to be the media that comes in and says, oh, well, Intel's bad news is AMD's good news. Yeah, but, you know, they don't usually trade them that way. They're usually moving together. So, but I'll say it's very resilient that all these chips are up and the biggest gun of them all is significantly with a bad quarter from Intel. So get above 21, get above that 21. What's the high of the move? The recent move, 2018, 2144. Get above that 2144 high. I think you got clear sailing up to the 2375. So you know what? I'll put my AMD bull hat on. We break out over 21.25, call it that. Then could be 24, 25 bucks. So if I was short AMD right now, I'd be very scared.
And this turned out to be one of my worst stocks of 2018. And I really don't know how in the hell it was, because when it got up near the 33, 34 area, I had puts in that thing. And they were not long enough. So could be some revenge trade here in AMD. Chart is looking pretty good here.
You going to buy some?
I think so.
Are you going to play long?
I'm going to play a little. I'm going to go in on the open. You know,
this looks ready to go. I think you got to get above the 21.25 though. Like, I think if you're coming in here now, you're gambling a bet, because it looks like it's going to break out. It looks like it wants to break out. It's very good news that it's trading up here when Intel's trading that much down. It's very good news that it shrugged it off and bounced back from as low as last night. Because how low did AMD get last night? We got down like 20-20s, didn't we?
Yeah, it did. And I was looking at that and I'm like, because I'm talking with DC about it. And he goes, oh, good. Now we'll be able to get AMD. I got to 2013.
2013, and then they started buying it.
They rallied at 86.
How low did Western Digital get last night? Before the shorts got the hell squeezed out of them.
That Western Digital, man, that thing was old. It took a little dip before the, let's see here.
It took the dip on Intel, and then it kind of rallied up before its numbers, and then it got hit on its numbers. It was choppy ahead of the...
37.51.
So 37.51, which down almost $3, and now you're looking at stock up $4. So it's a 7-point rally almost from the lows last night for a $37 stock, almost 20% off the lows of last night, Western Digital. That's an incredible move there, an incredible move on the fundamental data was not great. The media will find a reason. They'll say, oh, it's because they said the dividend safe. They'll find a reason, but sometimes they just squeeze the hell out of the shorts.
Dennis, what do you think AMD earnings on Monday here, too?
Yeah, you could, and obviously that's, we can't, when you have fundamental data, technicals take a back seat. So, when I say, yeah, it's got room to 24, it does. But if you get a bad earnings report or you get something bad, they're probably going to hit it. But, we would have thought the same on Western Digital. They didn't hit that one. So I don't know. I'm probably not going to play it ahead of the earnings. Maybe you play it your way with the calls, but probably the premiums are too expensive there too. I usually like, if I'm playing something for pure technicals, and I do like technicals on this, I don't want a fundamental data. So I think AMD can be strong today ahead of the numbers. It looks like it's going to be strong. You look at it this morning, you're like, oh, it's not strong. It's only up 4 cents. It's less than the market. But the resilience from last night, I think you can get up to the 21.44 at least. So I think there's room here. I like it here, AMD, at least for a day trade. I don't want to hold anything through the report, though.
Correct. Yep. You're correct on that. All right. So we got a big news yesterday, and this is another. We'll just go back because it's a stock that we talked a lot about. Dennis made a great observation about the preferreds here. Let's talk the move in PCG. Spencer, give us the news.
Yep. California regulators came out and said that with regards to the Tubbs fire in 2017, PG&E is not responsible for that. Doesn't mean they're out of the woods yet. Of course, there is all those fires from 2018 to worry about still, but a really good headline from yesterday that they're not there, that the 2017 fires were not caused by PCG.
Yeah, and that's why you saw the big move in it yesterday. This happened just after 3 o'clock, and you can see the stock almost, going from $7 up to almost $14, almost doubled, basically just like that on that news. We said this a week and a half ago when the stock was trading $5-6, and we were warning if anybody was short it that they might want to ring the register, because I was just saying I'm looking at the preferred market, and you probably can remember me saying this. I'm looking at the PCG. I'm still looking at the PCG preferred market, and they were trading $15-16 on the par 25. And I went through the financial crisis. When stocks are going bankrupt, when they're going belly up, the preferreds usually aren't trading at $15, $16, $17 on the 25. They're usually trading at $2-3 on the 25. So the market was telling you that, hey, this isn't a slam dunk that this thing's going under and going off the board. So it's still saying that, because some of these PCG preferreds are still trading $17, $18. I know the company came out last night and they said, from Reuters that they're still, intending to file bankruptcy here. But the market is saying there's a hell of a lot of hope. they would not be pricing these things as much, you know, unless they really think there's, you know, some stuff at the end for the preferred shareholders to still get paid out, which in some cases there is, you know, if there's assets they can sell off and stuff, but, you know, or keep the business going. Maybe the preferreds don't, you know, get washed. But usually if they're going, you know, into a bankruptcy, usually the preferreds will be out of money too. You know, the bond holders maybe, and some of these preferreds might trade as bonds. So maybe there's something left for them. But, well, I just look at that $15, $16, $17 on the 25. I see bankruptcy, I don't think is imminent. I'm going to say it again. I still don't think it's imminent. And the stock's down at $12. It's telling you there's still some hope here. So whether it goes bankrupt or not, I don't know. But the market is pricing like it's not. So I don't know why that is, but that's what the market's saying. The market is often right.
And just had a big move, a double halt, you know, shorts just scrambling. I'd keep an eye on yesterday's close and yesterday's high is two important levels here. You went off near the high of the session at 1395, 1450 high. You're trading in the red here by $1.38. But the only thing I can say here is that, man, there's going to be some bids stacking up underneath. I don't know all the fundamentals or everything that's going on, Witchfire 2018. But there are people stuck short in the hole here. There's going to be bids. I don't know if we're going to rally back up and take out that 1450 high.
But what's the short interest?
Yeah, short interest. And then
and the borrow, yeah. The borrow actually is starting to get easier. It was tough for a while, but I've got the borrow here. And I don't know what the rate's probably brutal. But what's the short interest on this, Spencer? You got that?
Yeah, I'll pull it up right now. Let me see if I can find it for you. In just a second, PCG, if I just go to...
Oh, it's short. I've got only 3% small. Is that right? All the shorts covered?
I'm seeing... Yeah, it's... No, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's small. That's interesting. You know, kind of going to go eminently saying they're going bankrupt and still only 3% short interest. It's very interesting. I'm not coming and advocating here, and I don't think, I was advocating, I should be clear, you know, when I was talking that I don't, you know, it does the price like it's not going bankrupt. I wasn't saying go out and buy it when it was $6-$7. I was saying if I was shorted, I'd be covering the hell out of it because, you know, and again, when a company's saying they're going bankrupt, you know, unless you're taking a pure gamble, and maybe this is a good segue into the person who took the gamble, you know, maybe through the options market, it's scary to be buying a stock that says they're going bankrupt. So I just saying when it's $5-$6, I think, you know, if I was shorted, I'd probably ring the register and not sit around for the last $5 or $6, especially with the way the preferreds were trading. But we had an options trade that the media was really pointing out, saw it on CNBC. Somebody bought a whole bunch of calls or something a couple days ago, Spencer. What was that?
Yeah, it was $200,000 worth of call contracts. They bought 10,000 contracts in all. And they did so yesterday about a half hour before this news broke. So they did it at about the trade we're referring to came through at about 2:39 to 2:40 Eastern time.
Okay, so yeah, about a half hour. Bad timing for that options trader, or good timing, I don't know. Obviously timing. We know there's insider trading that occurs. We know that sometimes somebody's got a tip and they'll go to the options market to get the leverage to take advantage of it. I'm going to say in almost all cases, the media will always point out a big options trade before a significant event. And I'm going to say probably in the majority of those cases that it's just coincidental that somebody just, you know, there's always somebody making a big bet one way or another. And you can always point out a big trade before an event. Sometimes, you know, there's a possibility. We don't know. Maybe somebody did know something in this case. But there's also the possibility that, hey, maybe there's, you know, a big hedge fund doing some hedging. Maybe there's just some speculation. You know, a $200,000 bet, I think that's what it amounted to with options. It's huge for, you know, your retail trader. But for a hedge fund that's operating in hundreds of millions of dollars, it's a drop in the bucket. So it could just be in a hedge fund saying, you know what, I don't think it's going bankrupt. Maybe they were listening to the pre-market show last week, and we were talking about the preferreds and saying, hey, maybe, you know, this isn't going to go bankrupt, and maybe there's going to be a chance or some type of Hail Mary that comes out at the end. So you don't know what, you know, that person was doing, if they knew anything or not, but the media will always portray them as evil in an insider trading, and every single options trade that occurs before a significant event is, you know, insider trading. And I'd say the majority of the cases it's not. It's just there always is a big bet going on in the options market in a lot of cases. And they're always going to point out the one that buys it right before the event works in their favor. They're not going to point out the 99 other people who made bad bets on, you know, put big money out there, $200,000 bet, and it didn't pay off. So because they obviously didn't know anything. So that's just a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, that they always label every single options trade that occurs before a big event, if it moves in their favor, that it was an insider. It's not always an insider. It sometimes is, but I think in the majority of cases, it is.
I mean, what would you say if that person or that fund shorted the stock too, and they were just putting it on as a hedge?
Well, there so you go. There yeah, we're at right now. That happening too.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know all the things. I'll say this again, and this is why, you know, I've got a buddy that this is a few years ago, and he is a pretty big trader. And he texts me and he says, they just talked about my options trade on CNBC, you know, saying, oh, what'd this guy know? And I'm like, or it wasn't that they know. It was just they were pointing out a big options trade and saying, oh, they might know something. It's like, I was hedging. It's like, I didn't do anything. It was just a hedge trade. And they're pointing out on CNBC, like, and I don't know who, you know, but a big options activity that, oh, maybe this person, I'm going to buy this because maybe this person knows something. He's like, I don't know anything. Oh, it was a hedge trade. So just because they point out something on CNBC that it's a big doesn't mean it's guessing. It's all a guessing game. You don't know what the intentions of the people. Just because you see something cross the ticker tape doesn't mean nobody knows, unless you actually know the person who bought it and you know that they know something. Nobody knows. So what their intentions are. So we don't know. It's all just guessing. Then people want to, it's a good story to label, hey, somebody bought $200,000 worth of options right before this. Oh, they must know. They must have known. Good timing. They must be an insider.
Okay, well,
maybe they investigate it. Maybe it does get investigated. But,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I think how many do you really see? How many, you know, here's a question for everybody. How many times do you see the SEC, you know, break out and charge all these insider options traders? You don't see it that often. But they point it out every day. So now
they have a whole segment on CNBC on that. They have a whole segment on CNBC on that. You know, big options activity. And
I mean, the Nigerian brothers do this, and we love the Nigerian brothers. You know, I you know that we know these guys. You go on their Stocks and Jock Show. We love these guys. You know, they do a great job with it, and you know they've got a strategy behind it. And you know what? It sometimes works for them, and sometimes it doesn't. So, but I'm just saying every time, you know, somebody you know, points out a big option trade, it isn't always, you know, in stone that this person knows something. I'm going to say a lot of times they don't. In the odd case they do, the Nigerian brothers are going to profit from that, though. So I think in a lot of cases, you know, they're looking at this, they may be looking at activity. And it's just, it's not even that they have to know something. It's maybe they're really informed, you know, and not in an illegal way. Maybe they've just done their homework and they're making a big bet. So you're trying to follow the smart money, not the informed money necessarily, but the smart money. So there's something to the Nigerian Brothers strategies, and we love those guys, you know, and by all means, you follow their strategies, continue to do it. Pete, you know, those are great. They're great guys.
Yep.
Great
yep.
guys. You know, you've had dinner with Pete, you know, they're great guys. So I'm just saying, just because the media points something out that, oh, this has to be an illegal trade, well, it no, doesn't necessarily have to
the
be
one thing
illegal.
I'll add.
Not everything in Wall Street is dirty.
Okay, and Dennis.
A lot of things are.
And Dennis, I'll add yesterday, the article that Reuters wrote to point this out. They didn't say it was insider trading. They didn't say this is illegal. It was just a well-timed trade. And you're right. It makes for a good story.
But they're implying that this person knows something.
It's well-timed. What else can you say? It was a well-timed trade.
And then, oh, yeah. It's bad timing if you think it was a well-timed trade. But, I mean, I've seen Cramer say it, too, on Fast Money. So they got to go after these, you know, and look at this and look at this trade that this person did. Well, you can always point out a big options trade before an event. It's just, you know, cherry picking the data is really what it is. It's what it's. That's the bottom line. You're cherry picking the data. So you go right to the. That's what they do. You know, media does that. Oh, let's go see what happened in the options market. Oh, here's one. Okay, well, let's make a story of this. This person must have known something. No, you're cherry picking the data because you didn't point out the 9 other times that didn't work. So, anyways, that's
just. Hey, Dennis, can we get to a question? I know we got some earnings, but we got some good questions from the chat here. Spinner is on top of his game already this morning. You just talk about a little bit of rotation yesterday, you know, the SMH versus the value stocks, the Coke and J&J. What you seeing anything sticking
yeah,
out?
Yeah, you know what? And it's healthy. It's telling you how the market is getting healthier. Spinner, it's a nice thing you point out here because the market is getting healthier here. I mean, we've had, you know, and this morning you're going to see probably some of the consumer staples weak relative to the market here as well because you got a disappointing Colgate report. So Colgate's down. I saw Procter & Gamble trading down earlier here, but it's healthy. I mean, this is what, in a healthy market, we've been seeing rotation all the time where they don't just buy everything or sell everything. When the VIX starts going up over 20, 25, 30, a stock is a stock is a stock. And they just start buying all stocks and selling all stocks together. Now the VIX is starting. So now you get separation. Now you get people saying, okay, well, this sector's strong, this sector's weak. Get some stock picking. So you're starting to see some healthy rotation. Telling you the market is actually getting healthier, in my opinion. So, you look at the XLP. It was a weak tape yesterday. It was a very interesting day yesterday. And it was one that I was like, I almost got caught on there too, because we had the TLT trading significantly higher. That's usually good for dividend stuff like the XLU. But you know what they did? They opened the XLU and they puked it right off the hop. So anybody that was making that trade yesterday actually got burned. And you can see the opening tape. It opened kind of up a little bit, the XLU, and they quickly knocked 1% off the price. So if you put the TLT saying XLU trades TLT, went the opposite way, it came back. But there was a wicked, wicked shakeout off the hop. And the banks were exactly opposite. Usually when you see the TLT very strong, the XLF and the banks will show some weakness. And that was actually the case in the pre-market, but they ripped that trade the other way and the banks actually ended up closing very strong. So funny things happen. You just got to be identified when you're on the wrong side of the trade and quickly get out, because I had some banks short and some utilities long right off the hop. And I was like, oh, whoa, something's going on here. And I was quickly able to, work out of those for, losses and cancel some opening orders. And you've got to realize that you got less than 30 seconds to realize, well, I'm on the wrong side of this trade or it's going to get ugly. So, and how do you know you're on the wrong side of the trade, I always say? You start losing money. So when I'm coming in something as an opening trade and I'm thinking it's an edge and I'm thinking, okay, well, utility should be strong because TLT is strong and utilities start going straight down, it goes ding, 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 crowded trade. Too many people notice this already. They're going to shake out the crowd. I need to get on the other side of this trade. So you got to be quick to adjust.
All right, Spencer, you want to bring us back here? We got some earnings reports.
Yeah, okay. I'll bring us back. We've got a number of them, and we've got about 10 minutes to our first guest, Farah Hamza.
Okay.
So let's go over to Starbucks. They reported yesterday after the close. Q1 adjusted EPS, 75 cents versus 65 cent estimate. Sales, 6.6 versus $6.49 billion. So beats on both EPS and sales in the Q1. For Starbucks, their Q1 comps were also up 4%. China comps, we've heard a lot about how weak China is. China comps were up 1% on a year-over-year basis. That's a great number for them. Fiscal year EPS guidance coming in higher than the estimate as well. So overall, great report from Starbucks.
Wrong. The person who sold this thing off right before the report was wrong. Street leaning the wrong way again here yesterday, because this had an ugly tape going into the report. So you know what? Nobody knew nothing. Starbucks, nobody knew anything in Intel either. Media going to point that out. Intel straight up ahead of the report. Starbucks straight down ahead of the report, and they're going the other way. So media is not going to point that out because it's not a good story. Fake news. Maybe Trump's onto something. But jump
Dennis,
over
oh
Starbucks.
My gosh.
It's a good report. It's a good report. $5 coffee continues to win. I'll go on the record and say I haven't been a fan of Starbucks for a long time. Stocks resilient continues to hold up. I'll day trade the hell out of it. It's not growing my investment portfolio. I've been wrong. It's 40, 50, 60 bucks. Didn't put it in there. Haven't been a fan, but it continues to be. They got rid of this. Schultz is gone. You think that's going to be a catalyst to knock it down? Has not. Stock's been resilient. Props to everybody who's been bullish the stock.
And I'll just give you the pre-market action here. 67.45 was your initial spike. And then it's been really tight, very, very tight here. So someone, I guess you could say it's tight on the upside. Someone really wants to sell some stock here, in the $67 area. And then you also have someone buying it there. But to me, after a big pop, after a bad day yesterday, I don't know. I think the sellers may come in and overwhelm on this one. That $67 area, that coincides nicely with the trio of highs from December. So, I'm long. I'm selling at 67. If I'm short, maybe you wait for a pop up to the pre-market high. But sure seems like a very, very tight market after such a big move.
And then
we did cover WDC, Sophocles. He was just asking. We talked about it off the hop. You can rewind the show and listen to that too. But I remain long WDC, and I'm sticking with it because of Sean. And it's rallying on bad news, always a good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, see if it can hold the gains just a real quick.
It's up a long ways now, though. I mean, you're buying it was $37 after hours last night, so I don't know where it goes.
You know, you asked me if I was going to – I sold that thing at $76. You can go back to the monthlies because – I know.
You're the WTC master. Did you rebuy
it? I know, but no, because you asked me if I was going to buy it at $60. I said no, and then you asked me at $50, and I said no, and then you asked me at $40, and I said no. And then you finally pulled the trigger.
I couldn't stand it anymore, and I bought a 36. I was waiting for you to pull the trigger. I pulled it for you. I don't know. Tell me where to sell it, chat. But I put this in the long-term portfolio just because I thought it was just getting ridiculously cheap. And I like the Sean. I give props to Sean Udall. It's the reason I was thinking. I asked Sean back in November about Western Digital, and he's like, "It's on my radar." And when Sean finally said he pulled the trigger and he loved it. At like $35 when he was on our show, or $36, I was like, Sean, pull the trigger. I'll pull the trigger because he knows the tech stocks pretty well. And you know what? Sean in the short run sometimes takes some heat, but in the long run, Sean does pretty good.
Yeah. We'll try and get him on next week. I'm sure he would love to talk for a minute or two about that, and as well as IBM call. Hot off the press here, 8:30 in balances. Probably slaved to the upside here with the spooze up 21.
He's small. They're obviously holding their orders tight. I don't see a lot. Alibaba, 53,000 to buy. That one stands out. It is up $2 here in the pre-market. But really, I'm looking at Square, 65,000 to sell.
Wow.
Just think Square. Let's talk this. It's been a monster. Monster move. It's up again here this morning. They're hitting it down a little bit because the imbalance just came out. You know, if you look at from 8:30, you can see it was trading up over. If I just go back to the tape at 8:30, it was trading 74. Don't tell me these imbalances don't matter. 74.85 was the price the stock was at when that 65,000 share sell imbalance came out, and straight down. So straight down 40 cents because they're like, whoa, there's a seller out here maybe at the open. So looking at it just from that perspective here, maybe it gets a chance to open on the week, but holy cow, stock has been strong. Wish I would have bought it. I actually thought about pulling the trigger in the 50s, never did. Now it's 74, and now it almost feels like too far to chase it. So I bought a couple stocks when the market was weak. Obviously should have bought a lot more. Square should have been around one of them. I said, you know, a week and a half ago when the stock was in the low 60s, I said I love the story. It's still just a valuation issue for me, but I've been bullish stock here for a little while, just never pulled the trigger. Should have pulled the trigger, continues to go. I'm not chasing up in 74 handle though.
No, it actually got down to 49.82. So if you were focusing on that 50 number, you got a good buy in here. Just calculating 75.5 is your 50% retracement off your 101.15 high. What did we hit yesterday? Yesterday, we hit 74.03. So if you're looking for that 50% bounce, it's up a little bit more at 75.5.
Wow. Resilient market here continues to rally despite Intel just sitting down there, you know, 46.60, down 6%. So incredible market here. Makes me think that, you know, the bulls are still in complete control here. This is a big day for the market here. You know, we've had 3-4 days of consolidation on the S&Ps. For them to shrug off this disappointing Intel report, it's a big day for the bulls, especially if we can get up over the highs from the last couple of days, 265.06, where they're right now on this buy, and the high of the move, 266.98. Get up over there, then you clear sound at 270, I think. So bulls fully in control. Buy the dip. They were hungry last night when they bought all these other stocks besides Intel. You know, they bought all these other chips on the dip. So, but there's tough. We're going to go with Fari here in a second. Fari's just messaged me, says he's ready. Want to go grab him?
We can grab Fari in a second. While I grab Fari, were there any other notable imbalances that?
No, they're small. I'm just going to move away because there's nothing really jumping out. Really. The Square was notable and it actually moved the market. So Procter Gamble, right. 45,000 a sell. That's probably off Colgate.
Okay, so let me grab Fari here in just a minute here. Fari Hamzy is the founder of Hamzy Analytics. Joins us every – actually, he's like an OG show guest. He's been on the show going back down like 4 or 5 years now since we started. But here we go, grabbing Fari on the Skype, and he's macro. He can hit on pretty much anything. So if you have
Watch Commander.
Okay, that's what he's going to say. Watch Commander. You have questions in the chat.
Decap.
Okay, we have a Watch Commander. We have a kneecap.
This is the Watch Commander.
He heard us.
But you guys didn't give me the odds. You gotta give me the odds.
Oh.
Yeah, in advance. It's like a foot. That's like, guess what? It's like Super Bowl. I got a guy in Jupiter. Now I'm doing a direction finder. Too close. He has not lost the Super Bowl yet.
All right, we've been talking these chips all morning here. Let's get your
opinion. Forget Super Bowl. Oh, yeah, let's talk chips.
Let's talk chips because Intel disappoints. They hit them all down last night, and right. They've all bounced back, and a lot of them are green. Western Digital rallying on a really weak report here.
I haven't watched Western Digital. I got to admit that. But Xilinx I looked at. Intel I did. There was another one that was good. Lam Research.
Yeah.
Remember, they were beaten up heavy in this downdraft. You see my screen there? Let me do a quick share with you guys.
Right,
just some charts. I'm just sharing some charts.
We like charts.
I am. There you go. Bravo. Yeah, just charts speak for themselves. There you go. Okay, during this downdraft, one of the early and heavy casualty of this war, or this fog of war, shall we say, was the chips. So it's not unusual for them to bounce back, and this is their first earning after that. So we had Intel up. We could not put a trade on Intel that we're comfortable. Okay. And we do three of us. We get on the Google Docs. There's a Skype running in the background, Skype for Business. And we look at all the parameters. We just couldn't do it for Intel. But and Lam Research, I haven't traded in a while because I've been disappointed. But I did watch it. And Xilinx, that's the 5G stuff, you know, fifth generation wireless. So, I got a good friend that actually works for him. I don't talk to him. No inside stuff. No. The one we traded actually last night was Sbox, because this new management has had trouble coming back up. And yeah, we're up 4% right now. Not bad. Now they're a little bit more moderate in volatility, and we bought a little bit longer term. That's all. But go ahead on the. I mean, if you look at, bring up LRCX. Here's the chart of the multi time frame chart. Oh, LRCX. Come on, Lam Research. There you go. Okay. So you could see, if you're looking at here, that this is the weekly. You could see the CI doing a bullish divergence. So this is coming pretty strong run up. Good. This is the weekly. If I come back to kind of a drive it down lower. This is yesterday. And we're up another 1% above this. 166 is going to be a tough area. That's a 200 day plus 4 sigma. At 4 sigma and 200 day, I think the smart money will take some profits out, and the sheep will be bewildered. I mean, they'll probably start buying now because, oh, this is going up. It's a little bit too late. You buy in advance. You know, you buy when there's blood on the street, you sell when everybody wants it.
We're on the line with Fari Hamzy. He's the founder of Hamzy Analytics, a frequent guest on the show. I've always wanted to be name the segment. You'll be sorry if you don't listen to Fari, but no one did get a lot of love on that. But Fari, I want to go to the overall market here. Okay. And I know we had Anne Marie on during the market meltdown. We had you on. You had some cautious words here. And now, man, this market, we made that high in the S&Ps on Friday on the options expiration. They tried to bust it a few times this week, and now we're right back up here. What are you using as a determining factor here? I don't know if it's a close or just a particular level to determine, you know, whether or not, you know, we're going to go back and retest those lows or come down to 2,600, or it's just clear sky is clear sales 2,700 and above.
Okay. Excellent question, Joel. Here's the problem. In my way of thinking, to come down here and retest these lows, which were what, 2,431, I believe? No, I'm saying 2,351. I'm saying close. 2,351 was 100 points upside inverted in my head. 2,351, this low, and then the intraday of 2346. To do this, you need a strong catalyst. Why? Because how did we get down there from up here? From the October 3rd high, after the retreat by transportation first, then the Dow and S&P, this demise started. Now, we had, as you go down, you'll see we had a number of buy signals that were all ignored from a technical standpoint. We all know fundamentals are pretty strong. Yeah, maybe the forward economy is slowing down globally, but here at home, we'll be doing okay. But we have trade wars, and we have what I call sentiment trade. This area down here, I would submit to you that since Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving, December 3rd high that we had, this was a sentiment trade. That is, because fundamentals are strong. They're not going to change in a few days. And technicals, we already had a number of pretty strong lows. You can see the readings from indicators. The way you look at what the low is relative to itself on the Sigma channels, plus what the indicators are saying historically. This reading down here was 277. It's negative. Usually this launch pad. Guess what? It failed. All right. So down here, what's left is sentiment. Sentiment means what? Confidence. Everybody gave up confidence. We have too much turmoil, too much chaos going out there. And the shutdown came. Nobody could make deals. So this was a 3.74. Never seen that. In the worst days of 2008, it wasn't there like that. So you got to buy that one. So technically, it bounced. Finally, this graph, after it's all flushed. Now, one more thing. In this area, before on vacation, was thin. Plus, you had tax selling. Keep that in mind. So all that exasperated the pressure we had on the market. Now, where do we go now? Where are we here? Let's go back to Joel's question. We bounced back. Some of that is a relief rally. Some of it you have to watch for is the dead cat bounce. We got to a key level, 50 bar. This is a 50 bar. And this was a death cross back there, right? That's actually accelerated. And this is 200. My thesis, as I write in the PMT, I think some of you guys get that, the proactive market timing newsletter I have on Sundays that comes out. I have said that this is a huge test, and we're probably not going to arbiter this properly until we even touch the 200, and that's three sigma. Why? Because a lot of people got in here pretty strong. As a matter of fact, this recent rally, I'm a part of a Blow's investment club here. I don't contribute much. I don't know much. I go there, I'm more of it's my sample size, my contrarian indicators. They are so bullish up here, it's unbelievable. Because, we fix everything. Just coming back, we fix everything. Really? Okay. We're about 50% retracement back up, I believe, or somewhere like that. Actually, Anne Marie would know that stuff by heart. But the whole crowd that day, and this was what we do once a month, I sit in the back, I just take notes. I'm not a group leader. I've done that for 10 years in LA, not doing that again. But there's a pretty good, decent per capita net worth in Naples. That's one of the reasons I picked Naples, Florida. And when these guys are getting too excited, what do professionals do? You take a pause and you say, you know what, sell it to them. They weren't this badly, sell it to them. So I think we have some back and forth going on. Part of it has to do with politics, some of it with Grampino, the stuff with Mueller. Market, I don't think the conditions have changed much. One argument you could have is, the Fed have, they got their hands in a handcuff for now. You know what? They probably do for now, because this is a problem. They have declared they're going to be data-driven, correct? Okay. We all love data. We all have charts and all that. But we don't have any data being produced during the government shutdown. They're lucky to get BLS to do a non-farm payroll. This week, everything has been delayed except jobless claims. So I think we're going to be in an area we don't know which way it's going to go. I would call it 50-50. It's a flip of a coin. But somewhere in here, Joel, this is the best answer I can give you. Somewhere in here is going to get resolved between these two. Yesterday I had an interview with the Stocks and Jocks. I may have crossed a line there. I should have, of some other information I had. Okay. I was indiscreet. That was my problem. But let me put it this way. There's some rumblings of possibility of a deal.
Wait, what?
You guys drinking coffee yet?
Yeah, wait, trade deal. Okay. I was making sure.
You know what kind of deal?
Okay.
Transition of power.
I'm making sure we're on the same page.
Okay, transition of power, yeah. I'm hearing that. It's coming from a few heavy-duty investment bankers from New York with very deep understandings of how Langley and other IC agencies work. Okay? You know what I mean by IC, right? Okay. No, not chips. We're not talking chips here. Okay. Langley. Think tank Langley. Okay. So if that is possibility of in the works, then you will have probably a turmoil first, a day or two, and then we're going to rally, especially if Pence releases the tariffs. He's up on tariffs, which is basically they're beginning to understand they need to do anyway. If you look at what Manchin said, if you read the tea leaves, they understand they're in a conundrum themselves. And so it's going to sort this out. Most likely it's going to be a fold. It's just they're going to blink and fold. Not good for poker players. Not in front of somebody like Nancy. So what? I think we're going to pull back a little bit, not much, but then we're going to rally. And the test of 3,000 is key.
A big thing, though, next week is we're getting to the heart of earnings season. We got, like, I'm looking Apple. 1, 2, 3, 4, Apple. About 700 companies reporting. Apple, yeah. Facebook, Tesla, Alibaba, Amazon, ExxonMobil, Chevron, General Electric, Caterpillar. I mean, there's so many big names. Right. Isn't earnings going to really dictate where the next move takes us?
Not if we're driven by sentiment. I'm hoping we're out of this role, okay? Because sentiment doesn't, it does. I've done a lot of work on sentiment work. That's what put calls were created. My chapter on master traders was part of it. The groups called sentiment. Me and Phil Erlanger wrote that section. The sentiment does not come into play often. Okay, it comes to play in extremes. Now, when it comes, it's a tsunami. It's not, if you're a California beach boy and you go out there to surf, you don't want to be around a tsunami. So my hope is that some of that is discounted out with this bounce back. But if the confidence issue comes back in or slash sentiment, then I think earnings are going to be mute. Also, some of these people, first of all, the earnings have not been as great as we thought. And there have been a lot of, downgrades or about every day that they've guided down. You've had a lower guidance. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, Amazon already said that. Apple already said that. What are you going to do? Am I going to play a lottery trade this next week on Apple or Amazon? I don't know. One of my the moderators on options room asked Friday, what's the guidance on that? I said, I don't know. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. This is not regular the same Amazon. It's not the same Google. It's not the same Apple.
Well, let's talk Apple because, you know, really, you know, you look at where the market's bounced, and Apple hasn't bounced nearly as much as the overall market has. Right. Obviously, the disappointing, you know, numbers from them at the beginning of the year is what's been weighing on it here. But, you know, now you're going to actually get the actual report here. Is it a possibility that a lot of the bad news is already baked in?
Yes. First of all, FD, Reg FD, full disclosure. We're about to put a trade on Apple this morning. We've discussed it last night, but I guess it's going to be dissimilar at the same
time. Is this going to be a big options trade that they're going to point out on CNBC? We've been talking about big options trades here, Murray. Is this going to be a big one? They're going to point this one out on CNBC like somebody knows something. They put a big options trade on.
Last time they talked about was my account size and the blonde girlfriend. Then I made a boo-boo. The account size was reduced and the boyfriend, I mean, the blonde girlfriend left. Yeah.
So all right, Brian, wrap up this Apple trade. We got about 1 minute.
Pardon me?
We got 1 minute here, so wrap up this Apple
trade. Full disclosure, we're going to put a trade on mainly into the earning, okay? We're more confident right now to play into the earning, go flat, and then take it up next day. Because you just said that, Dennis, a lot of this is baked in, and also what Joel said too, it hasn't bounced back enough. This probably of this coming week of the major names, Apple's the toughest trade. That's my 2 shekels.
All right. We've been on with Fari Hamzi, founder of Hamzi Analytics. As always, Fari, thanks so much for the insights and good luck on that Apple trade. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much. Honor to be with you.
All righty.
Thanks, Fari.
As a, poll, chart up of Apple up here. So 8:49 now. Let's take
a quick break and go get Jeremy.
Quick break, and we'll grab Jeremy some from real life trading. We'll be right back in a moment. All right, and as promised, here we are with Jeremy Newsom, CEO of Real Life Trading, talking to us live from his car somewhere in the middle of Tennessee. Jeremy, how's it going this morning?
Going great, man. How are you?
Good, Jeremy. I mean, tell us what you were doing yesterday and while you're on your way back. A really cool thing, and I want our listeners to know about it. Tell them what you did yesterday. Oh,
thanks, man. Thank you. So I went down to Fort Gordon, which is in Augusta, Georgia. Because I was doing a presentation for our servicemen and women. I'm working on creating a veterans-only program, you know, that focuses on the TSP and how to trade through that, and how to really best implement their GI Bill and things of that nature. So I was creating a course for that and kind of talking the basics of the stock market for about 40 soldiers in Fort Gordon. So it was a really good time. So now I'm just headed back to Nashville.
And how was the reaction? I mean, they're over, you know, well, here they're in the United States, but, you know, they're following the markets. What, you know, what was their overall knowledge? What kind of sense? That some probably some better than others? Where, you know, what was your base?
Well, I mean, what was amazing is you really get a beautiful overview of kind of just your average human being that's in the market. They don't really have a lot of information, which is totally understandable. Absolutely appreciable. And they had about an age grade from about 20 all the way up to about 50. So you had, you know, 30 years of age variance in there. We had men and women, different genders, different races. It was really, really nice. And we had a lot of individuals who knew nothing at all about the stock market. Brand new beginners, never bought a stock in their entire life. And then you had some who had dabbled. So we didn't have any, in this particular group, no real professionals or investors, like active investors. But it really was a great time because I went through the basics of buying stock. We talked about shorting, talked about supply and demand, you know, dividends, stock splits, talked about being an owner rather than just a consumer, right? So, for example, if you want to buy some shoes, you know, buy Nike rather than just buying Nike. You should buy some shares of Nike as well and have them buy your shoes for you.
Okay. All right. And I know you're not in front of your screen here. Just a nice rebound in the market here. A lot of people, you know, had the big decline and now we've come all the way back here. Just give us an overall market assessment.
Man, that I appreciate you asking that. So I did go bearish on the Qs Wednesday because it had a really, really good pattern. It's at a great little spot. I was like, man, I think we could roll over here. Had a great evening star reversal pattern, pretty much a perfect evening star reversal pattern. So I kind of had to go bearish. But as of today, this morning, it just looks like we're going to keep going, man. I mean, that we had a really good consolidation yesterday. Yesterday was almost a perfect inside day range, right? Very small range. And then, of course, on Wednesday, we had that nice little, you know, that nice little lower shadow come in. So based on what we're doing today, it just looks like we're going to slowly continue creeping higher. I do think this year we could hit new all-time highs.
I just want to ask you here, what do you do when you're on the wrong side of a trade then? So let's just say, you know, you made a trade here, you thought we could go down. It's not looking like you're going to be, you know, you think now you might be wrong. What do you do?
Great question. So in this particular example, since it was an option trade, what I'm going to do is just flip my position. I'm going to just exit I'm going to exit the put on the Qs and then just hop into some calls.
All right. So you will reverse the trade, eat the loss and reverse the trade.
Yep. I'll eat the loss, reverse the trade because I just, and again, maybe the call side loses too, right? Maybe we go up for a day or two and then that just crashes. So if I'm wrong three or four times trying to flip a position, then I'll just kind of cut it and go, okay, well, obviously I don't know what's going on. I don't know the timing. I don't know. Let me just back away for a week or two. But yeah, I usually will just flip a position. If I'm wrong, then especially if it's quickly. Because remember, I got in Wednesday. So, I mean, it's Friday morning. Yeah. Looking at the futures, looks like we're just going to continue to slowly creeping higher. So, I was like, all right, well, if I'm wrong that quickly, it's just time to get back in and just go long.
All right, Jeremy, there's a special reason that I'm having you on today. And we've gotten requests from our listeners in the YouTube chat and the pre-market prep chat for more coverage, for Dennis and I to be on for an additional hour or 2 hours of stuff. And so we got a special offer for people out there next week. We're going to be hanging out with Jeremy in his chat room from 9 to 10. Jeremy, tell them about what that offer. I just put a link here in the pre-market info chat. Tell us about the special offers you have for our pre-market prep listeners.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. You're correct. There's been a lot of buzz and just excitement from a lot of your listeners, a lot of the people in the chat pane that they just want more Joel and Dennis, and who can blame them? makes sense to me. So what we've done is we got together and created a free week for my company. So I have a company, and most people are familiar with it, called Real Life Trading. And next week is an open house week into my chat room. So I've invited Joel and Dennis to pop over. They're welcome to hop on the mic, talk the markets, look at gaps, look at trades with me. And that room opens at 9 a.m. Eastern. So it's pretty much right after you guys show anyway. So I figured, hey, man, since Joel loves trading the futures and looking at the markets, looking at levels, and, you know, Dennis is amazing at everything.
I wish.
come over. Let's trade together. Let's hang out. So it's all week next week. It's going to be the morning room. It's going to be the afternoon room. I mean, it's really pretty much coverage from 9 a.m. Eastern until about 6 p.m. Eastern. It's a great time. Really exceptional content. Great news. Live trading. Phenomenal question and answer sessions. This is a great opportunity for traders to get together, be together, and trade together.
Yeah, and you know, Jeremy, you know, he comes with specific setups. If a stock's going up, up, and up, he'll just buy it no matter what. He's going to teach me how to do that. And when a stock is going down, 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 he shorts it in a hole. He's going to teach me how to do that too.
No, I'm not good at that either. I need to learn how to do that too. Chase a little bit. I'm always like so against chasing. And sometimes you got to chase. I got to be able to identify those opportunities when you can chase.
Yep. And
sometimes, man.
Yep. And also, you know, you guys don't get to hear, you know, you hear Dennis talking about his setups and everything, but you don't get to hear about the file through. So if you don't have enough of his complaining from 8 to 9, you know, it will be primarily Jeremy and I from like 9 to 9:45, 9:50. And then when Dennis finishes up with his open, he'll be joining us, tell us what he saw on the opening print. And then I'll be sticking with Jeremy for the remainder of the day. And then also the 5 to 6 session. You know, I know a lot of people here can listen to our show live, but we also have a huge contingency that listens to our show after the show is over on SoundCloud and Google. You'd be surprised. So I think it's good. We're going to be able to be offering, you know, another segment from 5 to 6 p.m. where you're looking at the market, you're looking at what happened, you're looking at what mistakes you made, and then setting up for the next trading day. So we've published the links in there. Jeremy has a great setup, and looking forward to doing some additional coverage with Jeremy next week. So, buddy, drive safe. We're ready to learn some good lessons from you next week.
Beautiful. Yes, man. Like XLNX yesterday, I mean, just such a beautiful gap. So some really good opportunities. I look forward to helping people learn and enrich lives together. It's going to be a wonderful time, man. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. And he hasn't even teased me about Florida whooping Michigan in the Peach Bowl yet. That's what a great guy is. Okay, Jeremy, we'll be talking to you soon. Drive safe.
All right, gentlemen. You guys rock. Bye.
Thanks, all right. S&P's made a new high for the session at 26.61.50. We have just backed off there, 26.59. Folks, there's no numbers up here until the high close of the rebound of 26.71.50. And if we get all the way to 26.77.75, that is the high of the move. Dennis, you want to give us a...
man. Yeah. This market's just kind of in blast-off mode here. I think I'm on the same side as Jeremy here. It looked like we wanted to roll over. You would have thought Intel would do it last night. It was doing it last night, and they turned around and said, nope, we're buying this dip. We're shrugging off these disappointing Intel numbers. We're rallying. Stocks like Apple, Cajun One pointing out, it's up 2 points, $2.50 here now in the pre-market. Alibaba's up $3. I mean, it's a strength across the board here. Even and in tech, which is so surprising when you see Intel trading down 6% that the tech can show this much strength. There's buy the dippers are in control here right now. So if I was getting long, though, I would definitely want to still have a stop in place. Always want to have a stop in place. If I was getting long under, say, the SPY, 2 days ago, the low was 260.66. I know if you're a swing trader now, you're chasing it a bit. I hate chasing. Jeremy says he can chase, though. 265.33. So, you know, it's almost 5 points stop out. It depends on what your return is, I guess, too. But the bulls still seem like they're in control here.
Yeah, George is saying that, you know, everyone is so bullish. I mean, it's hard not to be here with the screws up 25.
I really don't think so, though. This is, you know, what I've been, you know, and I think Spinner is pointing this out on fast money, you know, and this is, you know, watched by a lot of traders. They have been bearish. They have been waiting. And we have too on this show. I mean, we've been sitting here, you know, consolidation station 262, 263, waiting for the rollover. And, you know, it's not happening. Even Jeremy was bearish yesterday, he just said. And Jeremy's, you know, pretty bullish guy overall, pretty positive guy. And he was bearish yesterday, too. And you know what? Sometimes you just got to read what the market's telling you. And even though, you know, I've been bearish here last, you know, week, you know, waiting for it to roll over, waiting for us to get back under the 2600. It's not happening. They're buying the dips. And that's telling me that I'm wrong about that opinion in the last week, you know, staying on the bear side. So I'm looking here too at setups here and looking to get long on dips because you know what? That's what's working.
All right, Spencer, you want to wrap up and preview Monday's show?
Sure, I can do that. So looking ahead to next week's show, we will be joined. Actually, is it confirmed to Craig Johnson? Is that
confirmed? No, he's not confirmed. Okay. Yep. Sorry
about that. So we got to confirm Craig Johnson, but if you missed any part of today's show, you can catch the podcast, which I say every day. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn, or just rewatch the show on YouTube.com/BenzingaTV. Thanks to both our guests today, Fari Hamzy and Jeremy Newsom. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Thanks to all of you in our chats as well, YouTube.com and premarket.BenzingaTV.com. Hope everyone has a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday.